My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. It is probably one of the most famous stories ever told. It is found in the four canonical Gospels and heralds the foundation of Christianity. It is the story of Mary, a virgin, who conceives a son through the Holy Spirit, and her son is the prophesied Messiah. But is there more to this story? Are there apocrypha, esoteric and long-forgotten or suppressed Gospels that share a secret about Mary and other women who were part of a sacred order and trained in divine conception? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Marguerite Rigoglioso, is the foremost authority on the history of virgin birth and has taught graduate and undergraduate courses in both the United States and the United Kingdom. Marguerite is the founding director of Seven Sisters Mystery School and the author of The Cult of Divine Birth in Ancient Greece and Virgin Mother Goddesses of Antiquity. Her website is SevenSistersMysterySchool.com, and she joins me this week to share her path and her new book, The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception, Mary and the Lineage of Virgin Births. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Marguerite Rigoglioso. Welcome, Marguerite.
Oh, thank you, Victor. Oh, my goodness, I'm going to lift that intro, and I think that would be perfect for I don't know, my next book or something. It's just great. It really gets to the point. It is the most famous story of all, basically.
Absolutely. So, Marguerite, before we get into this book, please share with us your path and how it led you to both scholarly and spiritual work that you do.
Yeah. You know, it's a long story. I guess for your audience, I'll begin with when I was 10 years old and my mother died of lupus. And that sent me on a Persephone descent that has lasted this, 48 years since then. And that really puts you in touch with the death realms, which means it puts you in touch with the great mystery. So there was something in that that I suppose was cosmically ordained because of, I believe, what I had agreed to come in to do in this lifetime, which is ever unfolding. But fast forward to, when I was in around 30 years old, maybe just after that, and I was getting ready for a pilgrimage of sacred goddess sites in ancient Crete and Greece. And I noticed that, I noticed that we were going to these certain places, Eleusis and so forth. And at the same time, I had discovered a book called Motherless Daughters, The Legacy of Loss by Hope Edelman. And I basically devoured that book in the bookstore in Harvard Square. I was living in Cambridge, Massachusetts at the time. And it said that the story of Demeter and Persephone was the only healthy mother-daughter story in Western civilization, in that it's the mother sticking up for the daughter, and that these two goddesses had celebrated their mysteries at Eleusis, and it was a story of loss and regaining of the mother. And just there was something in all of those things that I just went, chum, wow, we're going to Eleusis. And I knew that I was meant to walk those rocks and do some kind of ritual. And with one of the women in the tour, we did a ritual together. I had a mystical experience. It opened me to the sense that, wow, these beings, these goddesses are real. They are there. They are able to be communicated with. And that started me on my great path connecting with goddesses. Of course, I'd grown up Catholic, but pretty much had rejected it and, you know, kind of wanted nothing to do really with the Virgin Mary because she represented the virgin that is not sexy, that is not getting boyfriends, that, you know, all of that type of thing. What did that have to do with my life? So then I went on eventually to study, you know, I came in contact with other women and a women's spirituality program at the now defunct Interface Foundation in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And it was like mind, body, spirit playground for people wanting to take classes. There was a women's spirituality program. I took that. It opened my consciousness about the multiplicity of goddesses and women's spiritual leadership. And, you know, there were many mentors and sisters in that path. And I really became intrigued by the work of Maria Gimbutas, which was the archaeological exploration of ancient Europe in particular, showing that there had been goddess veneration before all of this other stuff. And I said, what's, you know, I want more of that. And I ended up going to grad school at the California Institute of Integral Studies. As I mentioned, I attended their women's spirituality program, and that really opened up my academic pursuit along with the experiential. And so from there, I got my master's and my PhD technically in philosophy, religion, and humanities, but the undercurrent was women's spirituality. And then I went on to start teaching courses in academic programs in the Bay Area. So I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area for 20 years. I started teaching undergraduate and graduate courses. And then eventually in 2000, my dissertation is really what's tied into what we're talking about today. My doctoral dissertation was called Bearing the Holy Ones, a study of the cult of divine birth in ancient Greece. And it was basically all of the research that I had done into ancient priestesshoods of Greece, which fascinated me, I think because I, like many people, have past lives there, and I wanted to regain my knowledge. And it was during that process and through an intuitional downpour that I was turned on to the idea that virgin birth was actually something that holy women of specific orders were practicing. And this was widespread in Greece and Egypt and throughout the Mediterranean world and beyond, although it was always sort of couched sometimes in hidden terms and sometimes more blatantly, as in ancient Egypt with the creation of the pharaohs in this manner. And so that, of course, opened me immediately back to Mary's story. And I was able to cross-reference what was going on with Mary by all of the research I was doing with the ancient Greek priestesses. And so that laid the foundation for my first two books, as you mentioned, The Cult of Divine Birth in Ancient Greece, and then Virgin Mother Goddesses of Antiquity. And I had the material on Mary, and I was already teaching it in a course, because fast forward to 2012, I started my own esoteric school, Seven Sisters Mystery School. I basically pretty much exited academia because there just wasn't room for somebody like me who was really going this deeply into the esoteric academics as well as the esoteric experiential aspects of spiritual initiation. And so it was through that school that I started bringing out the teachings on Mother Mary. But it's taken me, you know, those books came out in 2009 and 10. And here we are as of this recording, 2021. So it's, you know, 11, 12 years now that I'm finally, I finally started writing the book, you know, back in 2019, you know, into 20. And so now this is really getting unveiled in a more formal way to a larger global audience through the auspices of my publisher, Inner Traditions, Bear and Company. And that's where we are today.
Let's start looking at some of the language that we're dealing with today. Is there a difference in your mind and in your work and research between what's been described as miraculous birth and divine birth?
I use those terms interchangeably. I use virgin birth, divine birth, and miraculous conception or miraculous birth as interchangeable, in that they all have to do with a kind of conception on the part of the woman that seems to be counter-biological, mysterious, or magical. Okay? And oftentimes, the woman is a virgin. She is either a maiden who has never had relations, or she is a woman who has had to sort of become celibate again at a different phase of her life, so forth. Virginity, as it turns out, is a prerequisite of a miraculous conception of the nature that we're talking about with Mary, a very high form of it, because it doesn't involve any karma or energy coming in from the male line, and it is the woman sovereign in and of control of herself, who's directly connected with a star stream of wisdom, and it's not based on desire or egoic energies of male and female coming together. It's a very different kind of conception process, so virginity is necessary for that.
Now, in the pre-Marian story, in the ancient ones, did priests participate in this in any way, male priests?
Yes. So Victor, there are stages that I discern through this very extensive research I did. I mean, I'm talking cartloads, literally, of books back and forth, interlibrary loan. I scoured particularly ancient Greek histories, legends, which are supposed to be kind of mythological, and then myths, which tend to deal with things going on in the other dimensions. And what I discerned is that the first stage of this divine birth practice, a very ancient one, was parthenogenesis, basically just the woman conceiving in and of herself, becoming one with the goddess of all creation, and conceiving through light and, very high level esoteric techniques in and of her own body. And that would result in the birth of a female child. Her DNA, her chromosomes are X. A secondary stage of that is the male comes through that process. She's able to give birth to a male. A next stage of this is the woman is engaging with an astral presence, an astral being who is male. So it's an interdimensional kind of intercourse, but it does result in a pregnancy in a physical woman's body. And then the next stage of that is when these male entities, unfriendly male entities, come into the process that a priestess doesn't want in her space, and they actually rape seduce the woman. And these are the stories of the rapes of the maidens in Greece. So these are still disembodied male beings. And in this also come the stories of the watchers sons of God cohabitating with the daughters of man and creating this Nephilim race. So there's, those stories. And then the later phase of that is a more degenerated, it's kind of come off its mooring of the woman being able to have parthenogenesis. And now the human males are really controlling and hijacking the process. And they are acting, it'll be a priest king, like in Egypt, who will act as a stand-in for the god, an actual physical god. And it may be a later stage where the priestess is, to some degree, degenerated in their ability to just have relations with astral gods and get impregnated. Now a male human figure is needed, and then the male is incorporating the spirit of the god and then impregnating the woman with physical sperm And it's still considered a divine conception, as I said, with the Egyptian pharaohs. But then the male line can take ownership of the child, whereas beforehand it was really a female thing. The other role for men is in the purer form of the parthenogenesis, which I believe Mary was involved in, as was her mother Anne, which is a story we can start getting into as we talk about what's in the gospel. The men are not actual conjugal husbands. They are guardians. They are protectors, and they are spirit helpers in this. So in this comes Joseph, Mary's partner, Joachim, the partner of Anne, and we can go all the way back to Abraham, the partner of the biblical Sarah, who gives birth to Isaac. So that's what I would say are the various roles of men that have come in.
We're going to get into that a little later, but for now, please tell us more about this lineage that Mary hails from and why it's been hidden before now.
The information that I got this from, the place I got this information from, is a little known gospel called the Infancy Gospel of James, which Christianity is well aware of because the Catholic Church used it as the basis of the feast days to Mary, but it rejected it as an official canonical gospel in the 6th century with the Gelasian decree, when it said only Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are legitimate. Everything else is not official. It's, you know, got various problems, or it's ridiculous, and this was one of the ones that was said to be ridiculous. But the Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox Church used it sometimes, even I think in liturgical ways, but these stories are on all of the stained glass and some of the churches in East and West. And this is where we hear about Mary's conception by her mother Anne, and Mary being raised in her mother's sanctuary, and then Mary being given to the Hebrew temple to be raised by virgins and trained. All of this is training in divine birth. And I know how to decode this gospel because of all of the research I did in ancient Greece. I know the symbols, I know the signs, I know the significators, I know the meanings of things. And I was able to apply that kind of analysis to this gospel. And that's where I learned that there is a lineage here, Mary, her mother Anne, and Anne's sister Elizabeth, who is presented as Mary's cousin in the canonical gospels. But the Quran says that and other esoteric traditions say that Anne and Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist, were sisters. All of them gave divine birth. Anne to Mary, Mary to Jesus, Elizabeth to John the Baptist. And I think that this, again, goes all the way back to their lineage to Sarah, because when Anne is doing her divine birth ritual, conception ritual, she calls on Sarah, or the lineage of Sarah, as to give her strength and knowledge to do this process.
Let's just talk a little bit about Sarah, because a lot of people do not know the story of Sarah.
Right. So Sarah, again, this goes back to the Hebrew Bible. It's her name is sometimes Sarah, sometimes it's Sarai. People have said that it means princess, you know, different things. But basically, I have a whole analysis in my book, The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception, about her as a virgin birth priestess, what the evidence is there. And for that, I rely also on Savina Tuval's excellent work, Sarah. I think it's called Sarah Hebrew Priestess or something like that. I forget what the exact title is, but I apply my understanding, my analysis, to the analysis she's done, and we are able to show together that Sarah was a divine birth priestess. She came from the Mesopotamian, Sumerian, Babylonian tradition, where these women were engaged in things like sacred marriage rites and so forth and so on. Again, these practices ended up degenerating. But she was in that whole milieu, and you can see by some of the events and symbols in the Hebrew Bible where her story appears that she was definitely one of those holy women. She had the rights and privileges, but she was in a time when they were starting to clamp down on women's ability to conceive a child divinely. And these children, they were either not supposed to conceive or the child would have to be killed. And that's where Abraham comes in to try to kill Isaac, all right? So that's just a little synopsis about Sarah, again, showing that this practice was going on in the Hebrew tradition for millennia before Anne and Mary come on the scene in the midst of the Roman period.
And hidden in the context of the Hebrew Bible was that she was told that she would conceive at an advanced age. And the story is she laughed, and her name means she who laughs, because she laughed at the fact that she was told that she would have this child, Isaac, but she actually had the child. But that was hidden in the context of the Hebrew Bible. They would never come out and say that she was part of this practice.
That's right. And they make it look in these texts, and even a little bit to some degree in the Infancy Gospel of James, which originally was called Birth of Mary, by the way, you see that they give credence to the miraculous nature of it, but then they try to deny it or hide it in some way to make it look like Sarah is lamenting her childlessness because it was just a natural barrenness, when in fact, what Tuval and I discover is that it was because she was prevented through her role from having a child at that. Okay. And similarly, we see this, these little, it'll give you bits and then it'll kind of cover it over. Even in this Infancy Gospel of James, where, you know, Anne is having these similar laments and so forth. But I know how to penetrate under all that and really look at the hidden jewels and the hidden information that's there under the surface. And we sometimes have to brush away that obscuring to make it just look like, oh, a regular old story of, you know, two older women who prayed to God and he was merciful and gave them children. No, these were women who were part of holy orders. They had prepared their whole lifetime. They were dismayed that they had not had children prior. They had not conceived divinely. And they were in their sort of last hurrah stage. All of them were like that. Man, Elizabeth, who was in her elder years as well, and Sarah. So then enter Mary.
Absolutely. My guest, Marguerite Rigoglioso, her book, The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception. Marguerite, please tell our listeners where they can get this fabulous book and learn more about you and your work.
Yes, they can get it wherever books are sold. Some people like to go directly to the book publisher, innertraditions.com. It's also sold at through barnesandnoble.com, indie.org, and also amazon.com. We always appreciate a review on Amazon. And my own work can be found at sevensistersmysteryschool.com. And there you will find many offerings, classes, free audios, videos, events, several classes that are related to this material, including the Mother Mary Mystery Teachings, the Holy Womb Chakra Teachings, which is a whole topic, and then the Divine Birth Mysteries audio series. These are all background and expansive courses to help people if they want to go deeper and broader into the nature and the mystery of this new book.
And we'll be back with more of Marguerite and the Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Marguerite Rigoglioso. She's the author of The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception. Marguerite, you share that the Catholic Church relegated Mary's special gospel to the Apocrypha and rejected it as being part of the official doctrine back in the 6th century. Yet this sacred text contains so much fascinating information. Tell us a little bit more about Anne and conceiving Mary.
Yeah. Anne was a holy woman, along with her sacred consort, Joachim, in this gospel. And again, they are lamenting that this, they have not had a child. And what I discern is they're lamenting that they have not had a divinely born child, for which Anne was trained to do. So they put the pedal to the metal. They say, look, this has got to happen. Joachim goes out to the wilderness, and Anne decides to make a go of this. And what is described is her conception ritual, and it gives us little hints of what she's doing. One is she goes into her garden, where she encounters her laurel tree, and she rests there. And what we understand there is the laurel tree is a big sacred symbol. You see, so I would say, laurel tree, whoa, I know what's happening there, right? The laurel tree was the centerpiece of the Oracle of Delphi, where the prophetic women would give their oracles to people, kings and paupers, who would come and get readings from them. And laurel itself was a sacred, known to be a sacred medicine, that when the leaves were chewed, a particular type of this laurel, the leaves were chewed, it would create an open state of consciousness, right? And the fact that Anne is resting at the laurel is suggesting she's going into this open state trance. And that is what is allowing her to have access to the kind of information streams and angelic presences and star energy that she needs to create in her womb. And she, you know, she does some other interesting things that are curious to us. One is she puts on a wedding dress. You know, why would anybody who's upset about not having a child put on a wedding dress and go into her garden and rest by the laurel tree, right? You know, this is what I'm picking apart and teasing and, you know, expanding. Well, the wedding dress is a very ancient motif of, again, the priestesses who were involved in sacred marriage rites, right? But Anne's is going to be not a sacred marriage rite with a male king or a male god or anything like that. It's going to be a sacred marriage rite with herself. So this is what is telling, what is a symbol there, that she's doing parthenogenesis, that form. So those are just a few little tidbits. I encourage people to read the book to really see what's in there and be able to say, oh, these women were living, breathing women who were actually doing a technology. How fascinating. We've been shown that, you know, Mary's birth was just by happenstance and she was just a maiden, you know, walking along the street, and all of a sudden, you know, an angel appeared to her. No, you know, there was a huge preparation that these women were doing. And the book further tells us about the preparation that Mary had as well.
How do you counter the fact that the traditional canonical gospels say that Mary was basically a passive bystander in her own pregnancy?
How I counter that is that we have to bear in mind that these gospels were largely written by men. They were also then edited by men, men who were increasingly in a patriarchal religious establishment that wanted to portray things in a certain way and not in other ways. So there's been redaction or editing. There's been selection of what goes in, what goes out. You know, as I said, they threw bunches of other manuscripts on the rubbish heap. And so we're talking about the deliberate hiding of this information, either through distorting it, ignoring it, or, you know, denigrating it in some way. This is traditionally what has happened with women's information. And you notice how Mary appears hardly at all in the canonical gospels. She appears in the Islamic Quran more than she does in the canonical gospels.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it was a program to control the information about Mary and what she was doing and what her mother was doing, because this is very threatening to a patriarchal establishment.
As a specialized priestess, what powers or responsibilities did Mary have?
She, as I said, was trained as a child in various techniques. But what we see and what I talk about in this gospel is that she had prophetic powers. She was able to see, be a seer into the other dimensions. She was able, along with that, to connect with the angelic realms, the star realms, the realms of sacred sound and light. The sound piece is in there specifically. So she was able to be in communication with these angelic forces is what we hear there, or what I help us to see through the book. And then, of course, there's the whole program of what happened when she divinely conceived that hint at various powers of hers.
Many people of faith consider Mary to be an intercessional figure who can make requests for humanity on behalf to her son. Your writings point to her being a trained holy woman. How are people reacting to what you're sharing?
In different ways. I have had people, for the most part, those who are attracted to my work and the classes, they're eating it up. And these often are people, men and women alike, who got very interested in the revisionist material about Mary Magdalene, right? Over the last 30 years, we've had books, movies, The Da Vinci Code and everything talking about, hey, Mary Magdalene wasn't a prostitute. She was actually Jesus's most prized student who became his consort, right? People have been fascinated by that. So this is the beginning of a Mary evolution, a Mary revolution, where now people are going to start looking at Mary in just this way. And those who are wanting, they get and love the mystical tradition of Christianity, and they've been looking for something that honors that, makes sense to them, is not attached to dogma, and gives credence and honor to the feminine, are thrilled by this material. Then there are other people who get a little freaked out. I mean, I have put out a notification on my Facebook group for Seven Sisters Mystery School about the book launch event that will have already taken place by the time this comes out, but it's still available on April 6th, the launch of the book, announcing what I'm going to be talking about. And two people wrote in, this is scary, one person said, and the other person said, this isn't true. Check your King James Bible. And then Victor, I had another thing where a local radio announcer who wanted to interview me, we started chatting in a preliminary way. And when he started realizing what this really was, he obviously had not read the material in advance. He said, well, can you do this without talking about Mary or religion? And I just said, well, I can understand how this is not going to work for you. He said, I have a Catholic audience. I'm really nervous about this. Somebody else in the station just got fired because of something controversial that they did. And I said, look, I understand. I understand. We don't have to do this interview. You see, so it's going to have a range, right?
Absolutely.
Of responses.
Absolutely. And thank you for the courage and the foresight and the work that you've done to bring this message, because I think it's a really important message today. So thank you for that.
You're welcome, Victor. And you know what I want to say is it has not been an easy road. I mean, I have sacrificed muchly to be able to do this.
Absolutely. Mary is really an important feminine role model today, isn't she?
So important that it's only beginning to be understood by Western and postmodern people. Whereas, you know, she has been beloved all throughout Latin America and also in the more indigenous energies of even Europe and all over the world. I mean, She is not an intercessor. She is the goddess. They are praying to her. Forget about Jesus. You know, like when push comes to shove, she's the one that many, many people call on. I mean, she has festivals and processions all over Europe and all over the Latin American world. So she's already been there with the folk, right? It's just the woke folk that need a nudge to give themselves permission to honor and love this woman as the mentor that she is for people, not as the subject of worship. The mentor, the role model, she offers so much. And this book is just the beginning of what I'm going to roll out and what people are going to start tapping into.
Absolutely. It seems that feminists and goddess-centered people around the world have awakened to the idea that Mary's virginity was put forth by the church as a sign of her moral purity and that of strict chastity, and that this became something expected and imposed on all women. How has this contributed to the trauma, the pain, and the guilt and shame inflicted on women when they don't meet the standard if they are wild, free, and different?
Yeah. Exactly, which is precisely why I never wanted to have anything to do with Mary and why many women do not, many modern, you know, hip women do not. But as I said earlier, what I learned in all of this work, and especially the work that I did in ancient Greece, is that virginity was simply a technology requirement for this. It became associated with moral purity because the women who were doing this at the highest level were, yes, obviously holy, sacred, ethical women of integrity and great spiritual knowledge, depth, and penetration, right? So in some senses, morality ended up getting coupled with holiness, but virginity got coupled with holiness. But what ended up happening is, again, under the machinations of patriarchy, anything that is positive gets turned into its sadistic opposite. Okay, this is a valve mechanism that they have, that they use. So they twisted it. And instead of virginity being, first of all, a something in and of itself that meant the sovereignty in a particular way of a woman, they hooked it up with goodness and fused it there and then said, if you want to be good, you have to be a virgin. And started imposing it on all women when these things were, you know, virginity was meant for women in a particular holy order who were practicing a particular thing, not everyone, because we needed to keep the human race going. And, you know, so it became used as a weapon. And then with the virginity requirement for women up until their marriage and then... But there's so much pressure and trauma that if you violate it, you have guilt and shame. So then, like, it's like your whole sexual life is tainted with this guilt and shame, even on into, quote, legitimate marriage, or, and goodness forbid, women who don't get married or women who have serial relationships or whatever. So it has been something that's got really twisted in. It's like a knife that has gone into women's wombs and been twisted. To really mess them up energetically and psychologically and sexually. And this is part of, you know, this book is part of that teasing apart process because I make it really clear that virginity was a choice on the part of certain holy women. There's a whole other, I don't write about this in this book, but I have talked about this. There's the whole kind of complementary priestesshood, which are the tantricas who actually use sexuality as a holy practice and in a sacred way. So we're getting straight and starting to tease apart and take off this horrifying, you know, penetrating knife into women's wombs out of it so that they can restore their wombs to do what they will with it, what they wish to with their wombs.
And we're going to touch upon that on the next segment. My guest is Marguerite Rigoglioso. Her book is The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception. We'll be back with more of Marguerite after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
As the COVID-19 vaccines become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help me get back to doing the things I love, like meeting friends or traveling? And can I do it without putting my family at risk? You've got questions. That's normal. So visit getvaccineanswers.org for the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Satvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese. And guess what? Egg rolls showed up. Like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Marguerite Reglioso. We're talking about her book, The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception. Marguerite, can women today be trained to conceive in the same way that Mary did, or has this lineage died out?
You know, that is an excellent question. Has this lineage died out? You would think that in all the work I've done, I would have asked myself that, but what I know is that it's poked up piecemeal here and there, and I don't know if there has been a consistent, unbroken lineage. I would love to know, though. And anybody who is part of it and would like to communicate with me, please contact me at Seven Sisters Mystery School because I am collecting these stories, and a lot of people in a very ethical and confidential way. And I would respect the absolute secrecy of anybody who did come forth about this. So far, no one has come forth. But what I have seen and known of are women who have conceived in various miraculous ways. I do hint at one of them in my book, The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception. Her pseudonym is Lori. And I talk about in there briefly what is elaborated upon in my colleague Den Poitras's book, Parthenogenesis, Women's Long-Lost Ability to Self-Conceive. He knew this woman. They knew each other in, you know, in their 20s and so forth. And this woman had a spontaneous divine conception through a flash of light that came to her. She was a very high level spiritual adept. So at least she had that part of it. She did not have the training part of it. And there's a whole story of what went on with her child. There are, there's a Hindu woman that I know of that I met in person that I was told that she conceived. Her husband is a Swami as well. And they are holy people who have traveled in the United States and elsewhere. She conceived through her third eye when her husband was away. And I have seen her daughter online. I know of her daughter. Her daughter is sort of a, you know, a young woman now at this point. There are other people. There are other stories. And there are stories of kind of intermediary situations where various people have had different kinds of divine conceptions. Either they have felt that they have given birth to a child completely on the astral plane, or they have had an ongoing kind of prolonged pregnancy experience that is not culminating in anything. So there's various, we are in an intermediary stage. But I think it was ordained that we had this conversation because I have kicked in now that I would love to hear if there is an unbroken lineage.
Wonderful. Absolutely. That would be wonderful for those people who are listening who may have had that experience or know of that experience to reach out to Marguerite and share your story. We briefly touched upon this in the last segment. What can this aspect of Mary's story do to help women connect more powerfully to their wombs and womb spaces? And does the womb connection also apply to men in a similar way as in connection to the Hara, or is it only about women?
The womb connection definitely has to do with men as well. In the teachings that I have come to learn and also teach through my Holy Womb Chakra Teachings course. This is information gleaned by a Hindu master named Sri Kaleshwar, who left the planet in 2012, but was here in his 36 years, collected these ancient manuscripts from India written on palm leaves that had practices, mantras, and sacred drawings showing how to connect with the womb, clear it, and empower it for divine pregnancy, healing abilities, creative project empowerment, etc. And he was very clear that while men do not have the physical womb, they have the energetic imprint of the womb in them through a point in their body called the Nada Bindu point. And that point connects them back to their mother, all the way back through their female lineage. So a man can more fully engage with his holy womb essence through honoring his mother and doing these practices, which help clear her womb, and also for a male who is heterosexual to have sexual relations with a woman. He can connect with the holy womb in a very strong way through that. So for women, though, this is the dawning of the age of the womb. And there are so many hidden but available secrets and powers to our womb if we know how to use these processes and practices. You know, one major packet of which are these Holy Womb Chakra teachings from India. And I know there are many other women and men who are exploring this in their own way, reaching back into the Akashic records and getting the information, and we're putting it all together. So yes, women can connect, because Kaleshwar directly said that some of the practices Mary was directly doing were the ones that are taught in this Holy Womb Chakra teachings that I offer and that several other teachers offer, specific mantras and yantras. And this offers a roadway for women not only to consider if they wanted to become a full-blown sovereign, virgin, holy woman to conceive divinely, but if they wanted to conceive a divine child with a man, there's a mantra series that is used for bringing in a higher vibrational being. So this is all about women and men getting more conscious about the types of beings that we are bringing in through the womb space. And I do believe that in several generations, we will resurrect the full practice of holy womb parthenogenesis for the purposes of bringing extremely high-level avatars and star beings to the planet again.
Why is it so important at this time to reclaim the divine feminine roots and embrace the goddess?
Because the divine feminine is what has gone missing in this particular yuga or this particular period of time that we've been in. For whatever dramatic reasons in the universe, and there are many stories that we are starting to awaken to about the true nature of our Earth history that has been obscured from us. Many people are awakening to that, and they are understanding what has been going on in a much bigger picture, how interdimensional beings come into this, how places like Lemuria and Atlantis come into this, and how Lemuria was the original template where the feminine was much more exalted, and therefore womb powers were much more integrated with the society. We need the integration of feminine knowledge, womb wisdom, back into our society precisely because we are completely out of balance and skewed because of the machinations of patriarchy, which have privileged the male energy over the feminine energy, have either disappeared or denigrated, right? It, as I said at the beginning. So this womb awakening is part and parcel of the whole awakening of our bodies, minds, spirits, cultures, awareness to the sacred feminine that we need. The sacred feminine is a very, very important ingredient to rebalance this earth, the craziness of which we are in the thick of right now, as we are recording this. And I think everyone knows what we're talking about.
And I would put it into a very simple way from my perspective that moms would never allow the condition of this world to exist the way it's become.
That's right. And we need to empower moms, and we need to empower all women again. And this book, I think, is another key to unlock a door that we can go through to say, wow, what is Mary's womb power? And therefore, what is my womb power? Because this was not for her alone. This is for all women to consider and open to. And again, as I said, the bridge are those holy womb chakra teachings that I and others are offering.
Please share with our listeners about your Seven Sisters Mystery School.
Yes. So as I mentioned a little bit earlier, I founded it in 2012. It is a repository for many courses on demand now that I have taught over the years, including the ones that are related to the book and others, different topics. And it's ongoing. I'm constantly offering new courses. In May and June of this year, I'm going to be offering the Mother Mary Love and Empowerments Circle so that people can come wherever two or more are gathered. We call in her energy. We bring that empowerment into our lives. We stimulate our love energy because that is what's needed in our world today. So I have many, many things that are available for free, for tuition, for upcoming live. So people can check out the website. They can sign up for my newsletter. I also give one-on-one sessions, spiritual mentoring, and so forth. Sometimes people like to call in Blessed Mother Mary for the reading and so forth. So those are the kinds of things that they can find on the Seven Sisters Mystery School website.
Ultimately, what would you like readers to take away from the mystery tradition of miraculous conception?
That magic and mystery are afoot. That there is so much more than to understanding Mary and therefore understanding the power of the feminine than we have been led to believe. That it is time to lift this veil off and partake and drink deeply and let this touch you so that you can begin to receive your own information so that we can absolutely restore the net that was torn asunder.
The Wisdom of Marguerite Rigoglioso, her book, The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception, Mary and the Lineage of Virgin Births. Marguerite, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your books and find out more about you and this amazing work.
Yes, they can get the book wherever books are sold. You can ask for it in your bookstores. You can go online to innertraditions.com, amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com, indie.org. whatever mechanism you feel best, but ask your bookstores to carry it. And you can find out more about me and the further elaborations of this book and our studies of Mary and many, many other things at SevenSistersMysterySchool.com. And the seven is spelled out, S-E-V-E-N.
Marguerite, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your wisdom, your research, and this really important message that our world needs to hear. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Victor, and thank you so much for having me and for all the beautiful work you're doing.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.